Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Guitar Nerds Podcast, a free weekly audio digest all about guitars, amplifiers, and effects. But if you feel you want a little bit more bang for your buck, well, I guess there's no buck involved as it's free, but if you would like to listen to more, you can head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we have an extra half an hour every week. Well, what do you know? Hello and welcome to episode 222 of the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matthew Knight.
Hello there.
And we've swapped Mark Packham for Jay Cross.
There, hello.
Yes, an improvement, an absolute improvement. Welcome back,
Jay. I'm not sure many people would agree, I've got to be honest with you.
I certainly think so. You're back. Mate. You were in America.
Back once again with the Renegade Marcel. It's been like, I think it's been...
2 weeks.
Is it only 2 weeks since I've been around?
I think it's only two. It felt longer.
I think it can feel like three because you can do a podcast and then have a couple of weeks off. And then you sort of have to roll around to the next one. So sometimes it feels like three.
But yes.
You were off in America on official Fender business, which is very good because we have some cool, exciting Fender news, which we're going to talk about this podcast. Of course, with the NAMM round the corner, you know, it feels like we go for points of time where we've got like only two or three releases and there's nothing to really get excited about. And now we've got so much this week that we're not going to have a chance to get round to talking about all of it. But I guess, first of all, blimey, the most important piece of guitar news of the week by a mile, which is, of course, the very controversial and, hotly memed and debated sale of the Black Strat, David Gilmour's Black Strat.
I can't believe it. It's sold at so controversially.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
We're outrageous. So, obviously, we spoke about this on the Patreon episode last week, where we were talking about, we took the virtual tour, which I think is still up on the Christie's website. Listener, if you haven't done it yet, and it is still there, then definitely go and do it, because it's super cool. Jay, I don't know if you've seen it or had a chance to, but Christie's, on their website, they made a 3D virtual tour of the exhibit of all...
Are you not going to let me answer?
Oh, sorry. Have you seen it?
No.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you go. It was all 120 guitars that he was selling were there. But of course... You know, were
the cases on display as well, considering they were all sold separately?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They weren't, but there were some really random things. What was that? Do you remember that tiny Gailey and Kruger bass amp? MB100 or something?
It was a little, he used that as part of his setup. I think it's like a monitoring amp for a long time. I think it was part of his sound. There was definitely a reason he had it, and I can't remember why.
There were definitely some random things there. But of course, when we were talking about it, we were giving the sort of guideline prices that the Christie's website put out there, and also we put out a YouTube video on our five favourites, and I mentioned the guideline prices there. And now I'm getting quite a lot of flack on that video because people don't seem to be aware that I was reading official guideline prices. And of course, they were massively out. I think the, what was the black strap predicted? Like 100,000. Yeah.
But all auction houses do that.
Of course.
They're like, oh, we need to do it. They basically do it to generate hype. And I'm like, do you really need to generate? Do you really think that anyone's going to go, oh, I could pick that up. I'm definitely going to get a bargain here. No one's going to have seen this one. I'm going to pick this up for well under the asking price.
But of course, you know, this is world changing. We now live in a world where the most expensive guitar ever sold was David Gilmour's Black Strat.
I was going to say about that. This Black Strat, so it was what, 3.9 million?
It sold for 3.975 million.
Oh, yes. Right, okay, so that does make it the most expensive guitar, as in a guitar that is a guitar, as opposed to a guitar that's being sold because it's worth the sum of its parts, right? Because it's not got like diamonds and crystals and
jewels. Yeah, there was that SG, wasn't there? That Gibson, the Gibson SG that was a Swarovski diamond SG.
Swarovski.
Is that how you say it?
I've got to be honest with you. I don't know anything about diamonds, but I do see Swarovski at commercials on the television, so maybe. I see.
They're not real diamonds.
What aren't?
Swarovski. They're not real diamonds.
Oh, maybe that's not what it was then.
No. They are expensive, but they're not real diamonds. They're something else, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not necessarily get into the guitar and diamonds podcast. No, Swarovski is crystal. It's not diamond.
Right. Okay.
But they're still expensive.
I see. I understand.
But yeah, but basically, the Black Strat became the most expensive guitar that is sold as a guitar because it is a guitar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overtaking what? Overtaking,
bizarrely enough. Okay, so
I know we've done a video on this, so I know I should know. But as you all know, I don't watch or listen to anything that we do that I'm not involved in. And even stuff that I am involved in, I don't tend to pay attention to. Yeah.
So for a long time, it was Jerry Garcia's Tiger guitar, which was the last guitar that Jerry Garcia from Grateful Dead played. Then it was Blackie, which was the Clapton Strat. But actually, more recently, bizarrely enough, and probably something we didn't talk about more, and this, I guess, was more of a charity thing, but there was a guitar sold for $2.7 million in 2005 for a charity to raise funds for the Asian tsunami relief.
It was a Mexican Strat, wasn't it?
It was like a Mexican Strat, but it was signed by Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Pete Townsend, Jeff Beck, David Gilmour.
T. Townsend.
And other musicians.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah.
But also, wasn't Kirk Hammett's the 59 that he bought off of...
Well, no one knows how much he paid for that because it was private.
Did he buy that from G-More?
No.
He bought it from Bernie Marsden. No, he bought it from the geezer who Bernie Marsden sold it to.
No. Okay. Bernie Marsden was never involved in that guitar.
Wasn't he?
No, Phil Harris was the... custodian of the guitar for quite some time, and then it got sold to a private collector who, that's where the controversy came in when they did the Gary Moore collector's choice number one, because the relics were called the Gary Moore and the Noss ones were called something else because he was the owner of the guitar at the time. And then he sold the guitar privately to Kirk Hammett. Because it's a private sale, no one knows exactly how much was paid for it. This is effectively the most expensive guitar ever sold at auction, I guess, is the simplest way to put it.
Blimey. And you think, like, the neck that he has on it at the moment's only been on there since 1996. So it's not like he even wrote any of the big tunes on it.
Yeah.
What?
It's had six different neck changes, the Black Strat.
Oh,
the most recent...
sorry, I thought you were talking about the Les Paul still.
Right, sorry.
The Strat, yeah.
Yeah, so, but what's amazing, the couple of amazing facts came out of it. So the guitar was bought by Jim Irsay, who actually owns an American football team called the Indianapolis Colts. The in total auction value of all 120 instruments was $21.49 million, and his purchases made up 24% of the entire auction.
Wow.
So he bought the Black Strat for $3.97 million. Bought the 69 Martin D35, which was used to write Wish You Were Here, for $1.95 million.
That was also The single guitar that David Gilmour said was his favourite guitar
yes,
in the world.
Yes, he did that say Martin. That was his favourite guitar. He said if he was going to be on a desert island, that would be his guitar. And then he also
I mean, it wouldn't be an electric guitar, would it?
Well, no, I guess not. Might be. Might have an amp with him. Might have some electricity. You know what sort of islands these guys go to. And then he also bought, get this, the travel case used for the Black Strat for $175,000.
But again, the original case for it was lost by the Hard Rock Cafe. Yeah. Hard Rock Cafe? Yeah. Yeah. So that case is a replacement from 96.
Yeah, so that was the thing. The guitar was in Hard Rock Cafe when he retired it in the late 80s. And then basically they had a big nightmare trying to get it back, and then he used it from like 96 onwards. But what's also funny, I was just reading Jim Irsay's tweets from the day of the auction. So he's actually got like 700,000 followers on Twitter. So his first tweet was, "Wish you were here. I just obtained a 6-string acoustic for $900,000 going after the Black Strat. Proud to be the steward for the most important piece of rock music history. My VP," I love the fact that this as well, "my VP of special projects is at the Pink Floyd auction for charity, seeing what else I can add to the collection." And then he's just put, "David Gilmour, the greatest phrasing in greatest guitarist in the world ever, honored to bring the Black Strat to the public, the most expensive guitar ever purchased, and it's for charity." And then he went, "A 75 Colts jersey with Lux autograph is on its way to David Gilmour."
Oh, great.
And then he went, honored to support the charity. But I just love the fact he's like, "I wonder what else I can get." So for people who don't know as well, he's actually a famous collector.
Yeah, he's got loads of cool stuff.
Yeah, so he is a guitar player, which is a kind of the nice thing. He's like a multi-billionaire, unsurprisingly, and he is a guitar player. And he's actually put guitars that he's purchased and other instruments on museums and lent them out to other musicians as well.
Oh, that's really cool, because that was one of sort of the complaints I was hearing a lot, you know, afterwards, was like, this is the end of the Black Strat. It's now just going to go on some rich guy's shelf sort of thing.
I mean, it will definitely do that, but I think hopefully we'll see it out there. But other guitars that he's bought, I mean, so he bought a 63 Gretsch once owned by John Lennon, which he paid $530,000 for. He bought the Yellow Cloud guitar played by Prince, which he paid $137,000 for.
Oh, wow.
He also bought the Jerry Garcia Tiger guitar for $957,000 in 2002, which at the time was the most expensive.
Oh, right. He's got that as well.
Yep. And actually, I was reading an interesting story about that. So talking about it being open to the public, apparently the wife of a Grateful Dead fan got in touch and said, "Look, I know you own the guitar. Is there any way my husband could see it for his birthday?" And they invited him to the Indianapolis Colts field and then surprised him by letting him play it for an hour. And then Jim Irsay has his own private tech. Imagine that job. "Yeah, I'm Jim Irsay." "Who's he?" "Well, he's just like this billionaire guitar collector, and I just look after the guitars all day." So that's kind of cool that he lets, you know, he'll do things like that.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
He bought the Strat that Bob Dylan played when he went electric at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival,
right,
which he paid
$965,000
for. And get this, he bought the bass drum used by Ringo Starr when they debuted on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1964 for $2.125 million.
What?
Just the bass drum.
Just the bass drum.
What?
Oh, that's amazing.
This guy, I wish I was this guy.
Oh, that's fantastic, though. It's not the end of the world. Like, I think it's kind of cool. He
and the,
like
the thing is, it's never going to lose any money.
No.
It's always going to be worth that. There will always be someone willing to buy that guitar.
Of course.
So he is on the ultimate tonal quest, I guess you could say, to buy possibly some of the most expensive things ever.
Yeah. So speaking of all this, did you see what Mike Venart from Biffy Clyro and Oceanside was up to this week on Twitter?
No.
So Mike Venart, whilst the auction was going on, he was basically tweeting saying, "Yep, I just bought the Black Strat. I just bought it. Here's a picture of it," and just put up like a stock image of it. And loads of people were going, "Oh my God, I can't believe you bought it. What are you going to do with it?" And he's like, "Well, I'm lefty, so I can't play it. So I'll probably just put it in the cupboard, keep it for later." and he was basically just like murking all of these Gilmore fans.
Yeah, I'm just gonna I thought I'd change the neck on it, maybe restring it, stick a few EMGs in it.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting a Charvel neck or something. Those DK24
necks. Charvel
neck. I know it does.
What would be hilarious is if Jim Irsay was also just like post the picture of him, just like putting some stickers on it. It's like, oh, it's a bit mucky. Just getting it resprayed, sanding it down, just like,
I've always really wanted a nice shell sunburst. Trend.
I always thought it'd look better in shell pink, so I've resprayed it.
We should start a petition for him to respray the Dave Gilmore Strat shell pink.
Beautiful.
Oh, I'd be up for that. Anyway, we do have some incredibly cool news to get through, but first we'll have a brief look in our mailbag.
Mailbag.
Now I'm trying to make the mailbag a little bit more succinct, because it has been pointed out to us that the mailbag is can be a little bit of a mail brag, which I thought was very good.
That's good.
I read that on Facebook, which is obviously not its intention, which is why we've now started doing sound samples of the mailbag stuff over on the Barcords podcast, which comes out every Friday. On this, I will just briefly talk about some of the cool stuff. So finally, we managed to get hold of one of the Anasounds elements. We got the LeBrute, which is the... did you remember this, Jay? We spoke about these, like
the reverb.
The actual reverb tank. Oh,
yeah. You thought you were going to catch me out there, didn't you?
Oh no! I just
thought you were going to catch me out there, didn't you, Branton?
I'm sorry.
I know about reverb.
Yes, you do.
.com.
Oh no! I thought we were going to go a week without it.
Never. But yeah. So what an absolutely super cool product. I love the fact that you can kick it.
Yes, you can.
And it obviously makes a sound, which is wicked. And it has like a, it's got an option. There's like a little toggle for sort of saturation, and so you either have sort of a pretty straight, usable, really gorgeous sounding actual spring reverb, or it's a completely crazy version of spring reverb, like a really heavily saturated, over the top sort of shoegazy sort of thing. But I guess, listener, if you don't know, yeah, the Anasounds, they're a French company that make like wooden chassised effects pedals. Now, the Elements comes as a LeBrute spring tank, which is, you know, the actual spring in a sort of wooden chassis with a glass screen. And then you get the pedal, which is the controller, which is the Elements. And that gives you like input output. You've got a 2-band EQ on there for the reverb as well, which is pretty interesting. And then yeah, like a mix, an overall mix. But oh, they're super cool.
Yeah, I really want to try this. I'm super interested to try this, especially an amp with effects loop. You know, just keep it a little bit clean. Really dial it up. I think that's amazing.
And you have the ability to rack mount it or mount it onto your pedal board. Certainly he does three sizes. The LeBrute is the medium sized one, and it would fit sort of perfectly at the top of a pedal board. So especially those like Pedal Train Novo series where they're a little bit slightly too long for two tiers of pedals, so it would, you know, fit neatly.
Could you fit it underneath?
I guess you could. There's no problem with that.
Would it fit underneath, and then you could have it in a switcher or whatever, and then you could just kick your pedal board when you want to get the...
That's what you want.
Or you could even bend down and shake it like you would an actual amp.
Oh, yeah.
Or drop it like an actual amp.
Yeah. You could just
Probably don't do that.
You could probably utilize the ES8's pulley system, which I think is a hidden function, but you could set up the pulley function so that when you push the button, it raises it up and then drops it down on the stage.
Yeah, I think that's a completely reasonable.
I'm not
way.
Really sure how the pulley function works, but I'm sure Matt will explain it in a Patreon episode one time.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Matt will do his own. So that's really cool. I'm really looking forward to doing sound samples of that. And the other thing we got through is some stuff from Farm Pedals. Now, listener, you need to check out Farm Pedals. They're very, very cool. Farmpedals.com. And Farm Pedals are quite interesting and unique. So Jeff, who owns Farm Pedals, actually runs Hancock Family Farm, which is a vegetable farm out in Maine. And that's what he does. And then, you know, when he's got some spare time, he builds pedals. And they're
good on him. That sounds great.
It's absolutely
sounds like a dream
fantastic.
Life.
Yeah, so I was checking out the farm. You can visit that as well at hancockfamilyfarm.com. I was watching their little videos of them on their tractors and stuff. It's cool. But yeah, farm pedals, so super boutique.
Do they farm families?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
They
grow families.
Well, grow, import, I don't know.
Oof, that went dark. I was making a lighthearted joke there, Joe. Took it too far.
I'm sorry. But anyway, we got a couple of cool things from them. We got the Sweetly Fuzz, which I was very excited about because it's a completely controlless fuzz pedal.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
The cool thing is
it looks
they
lovely
have,
actually.
It's great. It comes in like a mauve chassis with a sort of a drawing of a leaf.
All good pedals come in mauve.
It's not mauve. Yeah,
that's true.
That's not mauve.
What would
like,
you say it is?
It's like lilac.
Oh, lilac.
Mauve's darker than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think? Okay, we'll say lilac then. Okay, lilac. But it's got an internal trim pot. If it's too hot, because of course it has volume and a fuzz level that are preset, and so you can open it up. Apparently the version one didn't have this, and some people said it was just, you know, too reckless, so he's he's added this pot inside. But the best part is it actually goes both ways, so it's at a default setting, but of you could actually in you could turn up the fuzz if you want. There's even it can do even more, or you can, you know, rein it in if you need to. But I love controllerless pedals. Do you remember the Prickle Fuzz
from Cog?
From Cog, yeah, that was
that was two buttons, wasn't it? It's a much bigger box.
Two foot switches because you had Prickle and I can't remember what the other one was.
Fuzz,
maybe. Yeah, that was probably what
I
it was.
I think it was an octave fuzz. So
yeah, yeah, but that was super cool. And the other one we've got is part of their Heritage series, which I assume just means the ones they. You know, have made for a long time. So we got the Boost of the Dead, which is a Jerry Garcia style dual preamp.
Oh, I know someone who's got a guitar like his.
But yeah, this is super cool. Has like a little skeleton thing with an acoustic on it. And so this is one single control, and then you've got two foot switches. So one is for the buffer, which it sort of enhances your low end. And then the other is the Boost, which works with the control. But a really super cool idea. Again, I love this sort of the simplicity of the pedals. The fact that they've kind of come up with a sound and they're like, here's the sound.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really into that, having the confidence to do that. And I think that's something that we'll probably see more of in the coming kind of months and years with boutique pedal manufacturers is, you know, we've gone down the route of extremely controlled. And I think there are companies that do it really well. You look at Strymon, you look at Chase Bliss, companies that make these kind of super malleable, ultra tweakable sounds. I think companies are going to start to go the other way to differentiate themselves. And yeah. you're going to start seeing these pedals that come out that are, well, look, here's the sound that we've made the pedal do. Do you like it? There it is. I'm into that. I think it's really neat.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I always think that, you know, there's something to be said for that sort of plug in and play thing. You know, you can get too far sort of lost in the other side of things when there are too many controls. Anyway, there'll be more on all of those things on Bar Chords. But for now, we should do some news.
News!
News! First up, Jay Cross. It's a very exciting time. This is massive.
Yeah,
in terms of guitar nerds' likes and interests, this is the end of an era.
Yeah, so yesterday, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, which is the day that this podcast comes out, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Yesterday, Fender announced the brand new Vintera series of guitars. And the Vintera series essentially replaces and marks an end of the Classic series and also the Classic Player and also the Roadworn series of guitars.
Oh, Roadworn's gone as well.
Roadworn's going as well, yeah.
It's blimey.
No more relics.
If you want to get a custom shop, yeah.
Clever.
I do. Thanks, Jay.
Okay. That'll be £2,500, please, Matt.
Oh, sweet. I've got just that amount of money.
Oh, good.
Left over. Could... my change for not buying a back strat.
That was your bid, was it? £2,500?
Yeah, I saw, you know.
But you can't buy a new one for that money. Let alone the original. Anyway, so Vintera essentially has two, and I'm going to try and go through this in a succinct manner as possible, partly because I'm almost losing my voice because of the amount of talking.
You do sound huskier.
I talk quite a lot. I don't know if you know this, but I've especially talked a lot over the last couple of weeks because I have been away. I've been, like you said, I've been to the US. I've also been in a bunch of countries throughout Europe talking to dealers and talking to customers and stuff. So I've been away a lot, so I've done a lot of talking. So I'm going to try and get through this succinctly, which I realise I'm doing a really terrible job of so far. But Vintera is split into two sections. So there is the Vintera, and then there's the Vintera mods. Okay? So Let's take the Strats, for example. The Strats, you can get a 50 Strat, a 60 Strat, and a 70 Strat. Or you can get a 50s mod Strat and a 60s mod Strat. And essentially what you've got there is the classic series, which is just the straight Vinteras. And then the 50s and 60s mods are what were essentially the classic players.
They'll feature sort of additions that make them non-60s, like how the Baja had a four-way.
Exactly that. So right. in the Strats, they're all 7.25 quarter radius.
Yes.
The necks are what you would expect from kind of vintage that era of guitar. So 50 Strat's got a V neck, 60 Strat's got a C neck, and the 70 Strat has got quite a chunky U neck. The pickups have all been voiced to be a bit more accurate. So whereas
they're in a whole new set of pickups, for
a whole new set of pickups. Yeah.
Is there a name for the line of pickups?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just kind of 50s, 60s, 70s pickups.
Cool.
So that's my understanding. Cool. I'd need
so
to
just
double check.
A revoicing essentially what was there.
Yeah,
previous.
Exactly. And also we've brought in some kind of newer colors. So for example, you can get the 60 Strat in Burgundy Mist. I'm looking at you, Joe Branton.
Yes.
What else is new? Oh, the 70s stuff is really cool. So the 70s comes in Mocha or Aged Natural, which are of course the absolute
on the Strats.
On the Strats, yeah, and on the Tellies actually, which we'll get to in a minute. But yeah, so there's 50s and 60s standard and mod. There's no 70s mod because, I mean, there isn't. And on the mod side of things, they've got 9.5-inch radius, 2-point trim, and both the 50s and 60s Strats have got an S1 switch. But the S1 has been simplified from what it was in the old Deluxes and in the Elites. So all it does now is it brings in the neck pickup in whatever position you're in.
Right.
So no kind of like adding, because on the old American Deluxes, the S1 had 5 different options and nobody could remember what they all did. And the one that everyone always used was, okay, I want the neck pickup. So that's all it does now. And the mod Strats also have locking vintage tuners. So they look like normal tuners, but they're locking.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And moving over to the Tellies. There's 50s Telly or 50s mod. And then there's 60s Telly and there's 60s mod. Now,
yes!
So just starting where people need us to start, the 50s mod is essentially still just the Baja.
It's still butterscotch. It's still black.
Black guard, yeah, exactly. 9.5-inch radius. You've still got the four-way selector switch, still got the S1, still got the same pickups. I think the neck shape has changed very slightly. That's what I've been told. But when I picked one up, I really couldn't discern any difference from it, to be honest with you. And surf green has been added to the... so you can now... Basically, the colours you can get that in now are butterscotch blonde, surf green, and Daphne blue.
That's very cool.
Yeah, really cool.
That's pretty cool.
So the standard 50s telly is a U-neck profile, 7.25-inch radius, and that comes, that again, 50s revoice pickups, and that comes in two-tone sunburst, sonic blue, and Fiesta red.
That is outrageous. A Fiesta red 50s telly.
The Fiesta red looks that's absolutely
so
banging.
So excited by that.
I bet. That,
absolutely
that sounds awesome.
Banging. The 60s telly... so not the mod, the 60s telly comes with a Bixby as standard.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 7.25-inch radius.
And is that only available in Sunburst?
That is available in Sunburst. Yes, I think it is only available in Sunburst.
Perfect.
Yes, it is only available in Sunburst. And then the 60s mod telly has got 5862 pickups, which are really popular, but also has the four-way switch and the S1. As well, and that you can get in seafoam green or Lake Placid blue.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And and so I guess I can't remember, were classic players nitro before?
No, that was actually right. That was, and this is kind of the thing, is that there were so many series within that kind of similar sort of price bracket that was the classic lacquer series,
right? Because that's what I own. I have a classic lacquer jazz bass.
Yes, but, you
right,
do so, yes right. And so, that doesn't, that's also gone. That doesn't exist
right.
anymore either.
Okay.
So basically, road worn, classic lacquer, classic, and classic player have all gone, and right. Vintera has taken on all of those. Vintera means, it stands for vintage style for the modern era. That's where the name comes from.
Oh, right. That's cool. Okay. I like that. Whoever came up with that?
Portmanteau.
Portmanteau.
What? It's a portmanteau.
Ah.
Well, you take two words and bosh them together, innit?
Oh, I see.
Oh.
Even better. That is
you, know you know what a portmanteau is? Like, you know how when we say weak ankles, we just immediately say wankles. Portmanteau.
Oh, okay.
I had no idea. Thanks for enlightening me, Jay.
Oh, there you go. It's a portmanteau. But anyway,
that's the end of the podcast. No,
see you later. Thanks very much. Okay, so that's the kind of standard
that's Strats
stuff.
And tellies. That's your bread and butter.
Well, yes. But then there's also kind of the 70s tellies.
Oh,
okay.
This is very exciting.
70s tellies, you can get 70s telly deluxe, which has got... Now, they're what all of these pickups have been revoiced, and basically they kind of sound like, to me, they sound like a kind of low output PAF, that style of pickup.
Right.
So they're not kind of a classic 70s wide range pickup, which I've, to be honest with you, I've never been a fan of. These actually sound very good. But yeah, so there's the 70s deluxe, which comes in mocha, which looks wicked, vintage blonde, and three-tone sunburst. And though those are cool, you've then got the 70s telly custom.
This is very cool. Doing a custom.
Yes, so the custom, which comes in black, sonic blue, or again, Fiesta red.
Outrageous. Fiesta red with like a parchment guard on a telly custom. That
I'm totally in.
That is really cool. That is really cool.
And there's also a 70s telly thin line, which comes in vintage blonde, candy apple, or aged natural.
Oh, candy apple. Yeah. I'll take a candy apple thin line.
And that one is 725 with a 3-bolt plate, and the rest are 9.5 with a three bolt plate.
Cool.
So that's the Strats and tellies. There's also some new offsets.
But not as many as I would have thought.
Really? Okay.
Well, I mean,
I have to say, Joe, I don't know where...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You've got this info from, because I certainly didn't send it to you, and you seem to know everything that I'm saying. I thought I was going to be bringing this grand reveal. I knew that you'd found out about this. I don't know how you found out about this.
Dark corners of the internet.
I didn't realize that you had the specs, but that's fine.
I'm looking at all the pictures of them as we speak.
Okay. Have you just hacked into my computer? Is that what's going on?
Maybe.
Okay. I know I shouldn't have changed my password to Branton666, but you know. Anyway, the offsets. So again, following the same kind of style, there's the 60s and the 60s mod. So we've got 60s Jazzmaster and 60s Jaguar, both of which are 725 radius. The Jazzmaster comes in ice blue metallic and Olympic white. And
with a matching headstock.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
yes,
really
sorry,
cool.
Yes, I've been talking about so many guitars, I was about to say no, that's in the mod, but it's not. The standard ones come with matching headstock, the Jazzmasters. So those are Ice Blue Metallic or Olympic White with a Mustang-style bridge, I think.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad that's the case.
I think it is. Actually, I can't remember. Let me just see if I can see it if I zoom in on this picture. Yes, that is a Mustang-style bridge. I thought it was. Then there is the 60s Jaguar. Oh my gosh, I've made this really small now. 60s Jaguar, which again, 725 radius, and that comes in 3-tone sunburst or ocean turquoise, which looks really nice.
Oh, that's cool. Nice to see that colour back.
60s Mustang. Mustang coming back into this sort of price point for the first time in a while, which is cool. So this is a more kind of vintage correct. If you weren't into the offset series of Mustangs, which obviously weren't kind of traditional, well, they weren't vintage correct, which I really liked because I wanted the hardtail, which is why I got that offset in pink. But yes, so these are new voicing on the pickups, 725 radius, vintage style hardware. And you can get those in seafoam green, 3-tone sunburst, or Lake Placid blue. And of course, they have a tremolo. The 60s mod, Jazzmaster and Jaguar. Now, I really like these. These are kind of a hybrid between the classic player and also the J-Mascis. So it's got a Justamatic bridge, which is what a lot of people like if you want that kind of... you're able to intonate everything a bit better. Also, you'll see that the bridge, the actual trem plate is closer to the body, so it changes the break angle and basically just makes it a bit more playable. That's the mod that you get on the J-Mascis, and I don't think that's been available on any Jazzmasters or Jaguars other than that one before as standard. So that is really cool. I've had a go on one of these and it plays wicked. And again, that is 9.5 inch, and the Jaguar comes in surf green or sonic blue. So that's those.
Wow.
This is a big change-up.
It really is a big announcement. It really is. And yeah, I apologize that I'm just sort of rattling through these, but I do just want to get to the most exciting one for me. So basses. We haven't forgotten you, Joe Branton. Don't worry.
No, and some blooming great colour additions on the bass front.
So, 50s P-Bass.
That stayed the same.
50s P-Bass is available now in Dakota Red or Seafoam Green with an anodized gold plate.
So it's Dakota. instead of Fiesta.
Yeah, and I tell you what.
Oh, that's the best red.
It looks so good, man. It looks so good. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
60s Jazz Bass comes in, again, 725 radius, comes in 3-tone sunburst, Daphne Blue, and the Joe Branton special Fimest Gold.
Oh, yes, Fimest Gold with a torque guard on a 60s jazz bass with the proper radius. Oh, I'm so all about that. That
the
is
70s jazz bass comes in Inca Silver and three-tone sunburst. Oh. Again, looks really cool.
Comes in natural as well.
Yes, and age natural. Thank you very much for your pirate info, which again, I... and that's bound neck with block inlays, of course.
Fantastic.
And the one for me that I think is just an absolute banger, and I think is going to just be so popular, especially with guitar nerds listeners, 60s Mustang bass. So it's a proper Mustang bass with a proper Mustang bass pickup. No PJ malarkey here, mate. Proper Mustang split single coil, three-tone sunburst, seafoam green, and wait for it, wait for it, wait for it, Fiesta Red.
Absolutely amazing. And you get the, they've even gone to the effort of putting the Lollipop tuners on the Mustang bass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is fantastic. They're going whole hog on this. Wonderful.
Yeah, so I apologise if I undernarred my way through that, but there's a lot of info there. And there it's honestly, I've seen the lineup in the IRL and it looks amazing. The ones for me that are the real like show pieces are the Fiesta Red Mustang bass, the Seafoam Green Anodized Gold 50s P bass. Mate, it looks so good. It looks so good.
The surfy.
The 70s Strat in Mocha looks amazing. Obviously, the 50s mod Tele, which, let's be honest, we're always still going to call the Baja Tele.
The Baja, yeah.
It's quality, so... The whole thing's amazing. The whole thing's amazing. Also,
a fantastic new range. And sorry, go on.
No, the only other thing, which I think I mentioned, but I kind of glossed over it, with the 60s mod Tele, which again is essentially the same as the 60s Baja, that's now got 5862 pickups in, which I think are much better than the American Vintage 52 pickups, which were in the old 60s Baja. I never really understood why the 60s Baja had American Vintage 52 pickups in. That kind of never really sat well with me. So having the 5862s, I just think that the whole lineup is quality. It's really, really exciting.
It does look like they've ironed out a couple of creases. They've made the color range more interesting, because I think, you know, with a traditional series, and you kind of even... You think classic player, they've been around for, you know, over a decade, more than a decade.
And the rest, I think, actually.
Yeah, and I think a decade ago and more, and we've said it before on the podcast as well, I think colour choices just didn't seem to be something that not just Fender, but a lot of brands weren't too fussed about. They offered everything in, you know, black, sunburst, white, you know, and maybe a red sort of thing. And of course, the classic player... And classic series suffered from that as well. Like there weren't that many cool, interesting, weird new colours. And we do seem to be going through a big sort of surfy colour renaissance at the moment. And certainly Fender have made the rest of their ranges all about that. And I'm sure that Fender have seen the sort of sales upside of you know, releasing you know, some things like Shell Pink and Sonic Blue versions of stuff that wasn't previously available.
You know, even looking back to when we were working in the shop, if ever there was an FSR that came through of a American standard or a Mexican standard, if ever something came through in an interesting color, it just sold immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think basically the people who are in charge of the guitars nowadays are kind of just paying attention to what's selling now rather than just making what they wanted to make. You know, there's some absolutely banging stuff out there, and it's really, really exciting. The range is quality, and the fact that it's all dropping at the same time, it's all in stock. It's not like, oh, here's some new stuff. Oh, you can buy it in 3 months. It really is shipping. It'll be in shops today now, really. So get down there and try it out.
Nice to see that Fender they don't seem to be excluding any of their models anymore, which is really good. Like, you know, the Mustang seems to be back in full force. We're getting proper Jaguars and Jazzmasters at every price point. You know, before, I think a lot of the offsets were kind of, they might be available in this range, but not in the other. It just seems to be much more, a much more complete lineup.
Well, I think that's mainly down to just supply and demand. You know, again, when we were working in the shop, the only Jazzmaster, well, for a long time, the only Jazzmasters you could buy were the Classic Player, which kind of was a jazz, but it wasn't a Jazzmaster in a traditional sense. There was the American Vintage 62 and the American Vintage 65, which were pretty expensive, and then there was the Squire, so there wasn't really anything in between. So having a lot of options, and especially I think now bringing together the Classic and Classic Player into the single series, and just having them defined by, well, there's kind of the Classic one or there's the mod one, I think that's great.
Yeah, it did really good, really concise series, and I guess it finishes everything off now. So I think that's every series that now has a new iteration.
That was the player. Last one that from player, performer, original.
So I guess now in order it's player, Vintira mod, performer, original. Have you discontinued Elite? Is Elite
no?
Oh, so Elite is still around.
Yep.
Ah, okay. Well, one more to go then, I guess.
Why is that?
Well, because you've freshened up everything else.
Well, Elite came out three years ago.
Really?
We were still working at GAC when it came out. Yeah. Because it replaced Deluxe. Remember the American Deluxe series?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
In fact, that was the first one to change. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so. I tell you what, I will miss Road Worn though. I thought Road Worn was such a wonderful series. Fender have done that a couple of times. Like, do you remember those? We've spoken about them on the podcast before, but like Highway Ones. You rarely see a Highway 1 come up on eBay or Reverb or anywhere, because if you've got one, you hold on to it because it's a blooming great guitar.
I think there's kind of a bit of that's kind of wormed its way into this kind of urban legend of the Highway 1s. The Highway 1s are great, but essentially they were replaced by the American Specials, which were, again, essentially replaced by the Performers. There's not a huge amount of difference, because I remember people always used
it was that thin nitro.
That's true. That was cool. But I remember people always used to come into the shop and say, Highway 1s, thing about them, American body, Mexico neck, amazing. And I sort of always remember sitting back and thinking about it, just being like, that doesn't, like, why is that amazing? American body, Mexican neck, amazing.
I just liked having that thin sort of ready to be relict nitro. And I kind of like that because I like relics, but I obviously relics have they're very Marmite. People either love or hate them. I do like them, but I do, there is that slight issue of it being fake wear. And I loved the idea of the Road One and the Highway Ones just being, they had this thin lacquer, so you knew, very quickly these were going to relic to your playing style. I thought that was a very cool
look at Mikey Demas, his one relic'd orange. Weird.
Yes, yeah, very weird, very very strange. Anyway, what a fantastic series. But Matt Knight,
can I sit down now? I'm exhausted.
You can sit down. Yeah, why don't you
were you standing up for that whole thing?
Yeah,
he's so passionate. You're just like,
he's holding the mic, standing up in the middle of his living room.
Yep. Maddie's trying to watch Critical Role on the telly, and I'm just there, in the way.
Matt Knight, talk to me about Chase Bliss, everyone's favourite ridiculous pedal brand.
Yeah, so this might be the first Chase Bliss pedal I buy. Not because I don't want to buy any of the other ones, but actually this is the one that I'm like, actually, this is amazing. So the Mood from Chase Bliss looks incredible. Get that out of the way first. It's like a peachy, reddy, purple. It's amazing.
Chase Bliss make the best looking pedals, honestly. Absolutely fantastic.
What's interesting about this one is this is their second, I believe, all digital pedal. So it's not following the sort of analog heart digital brain. This is all digital, designed in conjunction with two other
digital
pedal
brain
builders.
Analog heart, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry,
I said this is not that. So this is all digital, basically, and it's a collaboration between Old Blood Noise Endeavors.
I love Old Blood Noise Endeavors
and Drolo Effects, which are a brand I hadn't actually heard of. They build.
I don't know Drolo.
I checked them out. They build a bunch of interesting stuff, and everything on their website was sold out. So they obviously must be popular somewhere.
Wow.
This is very difficult to describe exactly what it does. And I've watched a bunch of videos and I've read a bunch of stuff about it. Just try and get a hold of what it actually is.
As with all Chase Bliss pedals, I assume it comes with about a million little dip switches on the top of
pedal. Ignore the dip switches, because all the dip switches do effectively tell you what the expression pedal does.
Right.
That's all the dip switches are actually doing. It just means you can, it tells the pedal which controls you want to move up and down with it.
If you
leave all the dip switches off, you've got the six controls on the front and then the three switches, basically. So this is they class it as a granular micro looper / delay. So the best way to break it down is it's like two effects boxes that can run into one another in a different way. So the old Blood Noise side is effectively a delay pedal. That's what it is. And you've got three versions of that. You've got reverb, which is like a multi-tap delay that you can smear the repeat into a reverb-like sound. You've got a physical delay setting, which allows you to use it like a normal delay, but what you can do is ramp the feedback all the way up to max and it won't oscillate. It'll just repeat like a looper, basically.
Oh, cool.
And then you've got slip mode, which is effectively like an old, it's almost like a tape head. So it's a single delay that goes around on the tape head. The more you turn the modifier control, the more it slows the tape down to complete stop. And then beyond the complete stop, it then puts the same thing back in reverse. So you've got that as a whole section that you can play around with. And then you've got the Drolo side, which is an always listening looper pedal. So what that means is there's a buffer inside. It's basically constantly capturing everything that you play inside it up to a certain point. And then when you step on the stomp switch, it freezes that moment in time, depending on where you set the length control. And then you've got different modifiers that you can use for that. So you can stretch it, you can use it like a tape delay, or you can use like an envelope. So it'll play your loop, but the more when you play over the top, it will stutter the loop with something else that you've played over the top of it.
Oh, that's so,
so
good.
The idea is that you then you use the, I guess, the old Blood Noise side will give you the more classic effects, delays, some reverbs, and then you can feed that into the Drolo Always Looper on Looper, or you can feed the Always on Looper onto the old Blood Noise side. But they're both are synced to the clock control in the center. The more you turn that up, the higher resolution the delay. The more fidelity you get, the more you turn it down, the noisier and kind of more ripped the delay gets, because you've turned the clock down, basically. But what's interesting is they've set all the intervals either a fifth or an octave. So each clock position changes the speed of the delay, but it changes it in a musical way.
Oh, that's such a great idea.
Because sometimes
when
you're sweeping delay times, you know, you want to keep it within pitch of the track. It's all MIDI controllable, just like everything Chase Bliss does. It's got expression and control. It's got presets if you want. Like I said, it's got all the dip switches for the expression.
I don't know how they even how do they storyboard pedals like this.
It's granular just delay is something that actually there's a lot of pedals that are doing similar things. So there's Red Panda that did the Tensor and the Particle. What was the other one that came out recently? I'm sure we talked about it. There's like a bunch of companies that have gone, and actually it's really popular in the modular world, because people are like feeding, you know, effectively like they're micro delays that you can then kind of twist and warp repeats, more so than you could on a normal delay pedal. So I think they've sort of taken that idea, but gone, well, what if you want to, I guess the thing about a looper, or take for example that I've been playing around with recently, the Plus pedal from Game Changer. It's great on its own, but it's a bit boring with nothing to like either feed into it or to have after it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You sort of want to freeze the sound and then have a delay pedal after it and then play around with the delay pedal, because then you've got a constant signal going into it.
Sure.
So I think that's really nice that you can have both. They can interact with each other. The fact that you can save presets is really nice, because I'm sure it's going to be one of those pedals that you find a cool sound on it. If you then moved it, you go, oh, I've forgotten.
And you'd never find it again.
The reason I really like this is it seems like a really nice evolution from something like the Count to Five. Because the Count to Five is great, but it can be very unmusical sometimes because it's so random.
Yeah, everyone I know who's owned a Count to Five has kind of found one thing that works on it and then just never touch it again.
So I think, you know, with this, it's designed to be that, but a little bit more musical. There is, I think, a learning curve with it.
I mean, I imagine there's that with every single Chase Bliss.
Yeah,
pedal.
But I think the idea is it's supposed to be an inspiration and creative tool to take your guitar sound to something totally different.
I mean, that is what they do. They're such a visionary company for this sort of thing. In a world where there are so many effects kind of, you know, doing essentially the same thing, how do you think of a new effect? And Chase Bliss just seemed to do it time after time.
Yeah, so I'm really into this. I think I may pick one up. I think that's a really cool little pedal that does more than just like a freeze type pedal.
Yeah,
example.
Yeah.
So whilst you've been talking about this, I've not been listening.
You went and made
no,
a cup
of tea. I wasn't listening. But what I thought was really weird was, you know, this has kind of come out of nowhere, whereas the Chase Bliss pedal that we've all been talking about and you know has had the internet captured by is the Blooper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the Blooper at its core sounds like a similar pedal, kind of a granular delay. There's been this ongoing campaign that started at Winter NAMM, and knobs have been a big part of, and knobs are helping the development of the Blooper. And then the Mood comes out and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe they've just ditched the Blooper. But they haven't. The Blooper is still in development. And from, I think, Joe, you know, you talk about how do these companies storyboard these pedals. I wonder if the Blooper was the first half of, you know, is where the Mood came from. And they wanted to take the Blooper in one direction. And if you remember during, I don't know if you've been following what Knobs, the video that Knobs have been doing about the Blooper and about how there's been quite a lot of changes and there's been a few revs of it. And at one point they kind of did move in a complete other direction. And I wonder if they started down the route of making the Blooper into something like the Mood and they liked a few of the features of it, but decided to take it in a completely different direction. But they used that kind of jumping in point, and that's where they got Old Blood Noise involved, and maybe that's also where they got Drolo. Maybe that's where they got Drolo involved as well. But I've just seen there's a post on the Chase Bliss pedal on the Chase Bliss website, which I've just skimmed, and basically it outlays the difference between the Mood and the Blooper, and it's all kind of romantic and a bit ambiguous, and I think that's fine because that's kind of what Chase Bliss do is that they capture people's
dreams.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they capture people's imaginations, and none of their pedals are what you would consider kind of, you know, typical guitar pedals. They're all a bit weird, and you know, we've talked about it before, how you need to learn to play the pedal use the pedal. And so I think this is cool, and I like that the Blooper's still in development, because I think it's what they've been doing with discussing the evolution of that pedal. I think it's really exciting. So this is amazing, and I'd just like to hark back to something that Matty said at the beginning, which is one of the most important things for me, and that's, this pedal looks incredible.
Yeah, it does look good, doesn't it?
It's a good colour.
It looks so good.
So incredibly superficial. But yeah, I'm very excited. I mean, I assume this is going to come with the traditional Chase Bliss price tag as well.
$349, which is the same price as all of their pedals apart from the
Thermate and Tonal Recall.
And Tonal Recall, yeah.
Which are what? They're more, aren't they?
They're $499,
yeah. Yeah, poor blimey. But then I guess, you know, there's so much research.
Actually, the Gravitas is cheaper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Gravitas is
What was the Gravitas?
The tremolo?
Oh, it's a tremolo.
Yeah, it's the analog trem. Cool.
Oh, that is cool. That is actually it for us here on the regular.
Crikey, is that an hour already?
Yeah, that's pretty much an hour. So we've got loads to
bloody
talk about.
Normally drags, but this has been quite... Maybe I'll take 2 weeks off again.
Why not? But we have got loads to talk about. One thing I did really want to talk about, which we don't have time, so we will talk about it over on the Patreon episode, which we're going to do now, is the Sun Earthquaker co-op pedal and the ridiculous pricing that's happened on the second-hand market now. And you know, we'll talk about some other things as well, like PRS for no reason, you know, starting to manufacture strings, which is pretty bizarre. But anyway, we will continue over on the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you the Patreon episode and loads of other stuff. And $10 makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one breath by me. And there have been a couple more, one more 10-tier backer this week. So I am absolutely on my last legs with it, which I am looking forward to. I'm looking forward to really being able to read these out normally again.
You're going to have to think of a new shtick.
Thing. Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, will that day be today?
I think you should read them backwards.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Spoonerize them all, maybe.
No. This is something that you're going to need to do in your own time because I don't need to listen to it. You're going to need to read them backwards and then play that
forwards.
Play that backwards.
Such a good idea.
Like Twin Peaks.
Good idea. Yeah, I'm into that. I'm up for that. Anyway, here we go. John Pearson, John Mayer, slowly burning in a dancing room. Zach Melton, Jim Welters, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric Pryor, Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce, Chris, Jake Cuttenmore, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Arnie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hintz, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Henry James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sherman, Blake White, and Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Cray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Arms, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bentley, Steve Michael, DJ Mark Cross, Michael McRae, Carlos Mantra, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moo Garrett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Dye, Ken Sayers, Matthew Ginn, Scott Payne, Sean Arbo, Christopher Wolf, my comfort son.
Was that all of them?
You're getting there.
I'm not sure I could have got one more out. That was all of them.
Was that all of them, really?
That was all of them, yeah. Yeah, well, Oh, blimey. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds. Join us on Facebook. Yeah, that's what I always say, at.
Yeah, I know.
At.
Seems a bit superfluous.
Okay. I suppose so. Should I just say at Guitar Nerds, do you think?
Okay. Can we start this again? Can you mind just reading the names out?
The whole podcast.
Sure, yeah. Hello and welcome to episode 222 of the Guitar... Yes, follow us on Instagram, at Twitter, at Guitar Nerds. Join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. It's where all the fun stuff happens. It's full of wonderful conversation. And why not subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. That's it for us from this week. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode. Farewell.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.